Colonel Hayne, Rail 5. Colonel Hayne, you were describing how the Germans in the Hindenburg line had just pushed your company back past the strong point.
Yes, that's right. They were far too strong for us. They were Prussian guards, and they infiltrated up the side trenches, and I was terrified that we were going to be completely surrounded. So we decided discretion was the better part of valor, and we scrambled back, you can't call it anything else, to where we'd started from, the block in the trench where we'd started from that morning. And that day they put in several bombing attacks and that sort of thing, but I don't know, we seemed to manage to hold out. The troops on my right were absolutely invaluable. Mind you, our left was right in the air. We hadn't got anybody at all. The Germans were in their front line, and we were in their bit of the front line. But on the left, there was nobody except this battalion, these battalions, which were lying, I suppose, beyond the German wire. But they weren't effective at all at that time. Well, the day wore on. It's very difficult when you're in a show like that to know the time of day or what the day of the week it is, for that matter. And eventually night fell and things quietened down a bit. We didn't have many casualties during that period. We'd had quite a lot getting the thing. I lost some extremely good chaps round about that strong point. And we sort of quietened down for the night. Well, you say quietened down, but you don't sleep, of course. There's no question of sleep at a thing like that. And I remember about some time before dawn, I don't know when it was, a runner came up and said the CO wanted to see me. Well, he was in the same trench as we were. It was only a question of going a couple hundred yards along the trench where battalion headquarters was, advanced battalion headquarters, and they were in a dugout there. And I left the company in charge of Noel Baines, went down there, and Aussie, that was our colonel, the Colonel Osmond, he said, "Well, Bill," there was no very much. There was plenty of discipline, but we were all on very, very good terms. He said, "Well, Bill," he said, "you've got to do it again." I said, "Good God." He said, "Yes." I said, "Well, what about two company?" Because two company had been held in reserve around battalion headquarters the whole time, and they were company intact, you see. I shall never forget him. He said, "Bill," he said, "I dare not risk it." He said, "You've got to do it." So I said, "Very good, sir." Words to that effect. And went back. Well, at dawn, we managed to scrape up a couple of mortars from somewhere. Where they came from, I don't know. Stokes mortars. And they were some distance behind us, of course, because we were far too close to the Germans. But they bunged in a few rounds, and I thought it was a completely forlorn business. And we did exactly the same exercise as we did before. We fanned out as far as we could to the wire. And I must tell you one little incident that, I mean, these things, after all these years, 50-something years, 57 years, I think it is, it impresses upon you. Just when these people were mortaring, a big German got up out of the trench, and he got a bandage around his head. He hadn't got a helmet on, he got a bandage out of his head, and he started running zigzag backwards, and the chap next door to me got his rifle. I said, "Don't." For some reason or other, I don't know why, I said, "Don't." And I'm certain that fella started a panic. Because when we went there, these Prussian guards, they put up their hands. And we captured about 50 of them again. And that was that. The previous day, when we'd been in the morning, I'd got down into the deep dugout, which was on this bank, and there was a wounded German lying down there. He wasn't a Prussian, he was a Württemberger, I think, and he spoke extremely good English. He told him he'd been to Heidelberg University. And we did what we could for him. We gave him a bit of food and that sort of thing, you know. And when we got in the following day, he was still there. And whether it was his manner or not, but he was cursing the Prussians like anything. He said they had none of the damn thing for him. But at any rate, I believe we got him down. I wouldn't be quite sure. But at any rate, the moment we did get in, we got back and to Aussie, you see. And Aussie immediately sent two companies through us with Alfred Pollard. And Alfred was a stalwart. He'd been out since 1914. And he took his company through. But Alfred was a terrific individualist. He'd already got a DCM up at Ypres and collected two MCs. And Alfred was one of these far-eating type, and he went through and he took on we passed sort of bombs along, and to him and his company, and he more or less left his company behind and just depended upon about half a dozen stalwarts. And he bombed, and he took 200 or 300 yards of that trench right the way along, because the British bomb, if you were a good bomber with a Mills, you could outrange the German stick bomb by a yard or two, 2 or 3, 5 yards possibly. We reckoned that a really good bomber could throw a Mills 50 yards, I beg your pardon, 30 yards. And Alfred took him on, and he really got him on the run. And by the evening, then I had to extend my company out towards him because we were so thin on the ground again. And he was right up at the danger end of things towards Oppy Wood. But by the evening, we had taken all the ground which these battalions were supposed to have taken on the morning of the 28th. This was the evening of the 29th, and it was a two-day show. And that was that. We stuck there, and that night we were relieved by another division. It was some Yorkshire regiment relieved us, I think, and came out of the line, and then didn't realise how completely whacked one was, of course, but one was, and that was the end of that. It was quite a show, though. From a battalion point of view, it was a magnificent show because every chap was 100%. Being in a regiment like the HAC was not a difficult job for an officer, because it didn't matter if you were there or not, really. Any lance corporal could take over, or any private for that matter, and they were all equally good. So one doesn't take credit on oneself in the very slightest for these shows.
When did you hear that you had been awarded Victoria Cross for those days' activities?
Well, we came back that night. I remember we got back to a place called Point du Jour, which was as far as the transport could bring up, and the limber came up with tea. And I was completely dead, I don't mind telling you. I mean, I didn't realise how whacked I was. I remember being put on a horse, and I can't remember anything more until I found myself in this field outside Rocklincourt, where we were going to rest. And there were tents there, and I don't know what hour of the night we got back. We got back sometime during the night. And I was terribly annoyed, because they woke me and they said, the general wants to see you. You say, and I said, oh, hell. But at any rate, this figure walked in, and it wasn't the divisional commander, it was the corps commander. It was old General Congreve. I don't know if you've ever heard of him at all. He was commanding 13th Corps. And he came and he said, oh, you were the chap, or you were the officer, or whatever it was, who was commanding the company which took. I said, yes. So he said, well, tell me all about it. Well, there was nothing much I could tell him. I've talked more to you than I talked to him. I said, well, we who did it, you see. And then he said he wanted to see Alf Pollard, so he saw the two of us, and that's all we knew about it. About a month later, I suppose, we were in the line, and we'd come back to rest outside Arras, and this news came through. A chap called Aspinall, who was GSO 1 of the division, came along, and there was a bit of a party from Arras. There was a thing called the 13th Corps Club there. I don't think they had any booze at all left after this, because it was a real party. We had the whole division there, and that was that.
Were you surprised?
Yes, of course I was. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I never dreamt of it. I never thought of it.
Had you sort of forgotten about the incident?
Well, no, you hadn't. What do you mean about the show or the?
Yes, about the show.
Oh no, you don't forget shows like that. They're impressed on your mind. Otherwise, yes. I couldn't talk to you 57 yes. years afterwards, could I? Really? Well, after that, we went into the line for a bit, and then we both came home in July, I think it was July 17, and had an investiture at Buckingham Palace. Then we went back to...
Did the King say, ask you about...
Oh, yes. The King George V was a remarkable man. he had a wonderful memory. And when he spoke to... There were quite a lot of us at this investiture. As a matter of fact, in my desk, I've got the original investiture thing. There were all sorts of people. I think there were about a dozen VCs altogether he invested. But when he spoke to us, he spoke about the battalion chiefly, and it was astounding, his knowledge of the battalion and the officers in it, you know. He inquired after individual people. And I found that I met him on several other occasions later on, and he never forgot a thing. He never missed a trick, that man. Well, then we had our leave. We got a bit of extended leave because Alf's, I think it was sister or sister-in-law, got something notifiable, some disease or other, and then we weren't allowed to go back. So we went and had a holiday on the Isle of Wight for about 10 days or a fortnight, which pleased us immensely. Then when we did go back, the battalion was withdrawn from the line because I think by that time they'd realised the waste of material. It took them 2 or 3 years to realise it, because it was practically all officer material, and to have these chaps slaughtered as privates the whole time, it really didn't make sense. So we were dragged behind the lines and turned into what they call GHQ troops. We did guards and that sort of thing, and also this... it was more or less an OTC. We drafted people to... train them and got and they went off to various units. We used to have to guard old Dougie Hagen. We all admired him tremendously, you know. We thought he was a wonderful man, and he was a wonderful man in my opinion. Whatever Lloyd George and all those people said about him, if it hadn't been for Dougie, we shouldn't have won the war. The people at home just did not realise what he and we were up against, with the French practically collapsing, you know, in round about Passchendaele time. He had to carry on with that. No man could do otherwise. I know the sacrifice of the British Army was terrific, and it really destroyed the British Army, but if it hadn't done that, we should have been slaves of Germany, I'm sure of that. That is my humble opinion.
Did you have any examples of the French forces, what they were like? See them in the line?
No, none at all. None at all. We just didn't mix. The only time I saw the French forces really were in 1914, when we were mixed up a bit, and they were in their. There were a lot of French dead lying about round about Kemmel, in front of Kemmel. A lot of them, and they were in their blue coats and red trousers.
Yes,
I've got a French bayonet over there. As a matter of fact, I took from one of them. It's in the fireplace over there. Mm-hmm.
Did you have any come into contact with any of the other Allied armies?
Well, the only other people I came into contact with were the Americans. You see, when we were dragged out of the line and formed GHQ troops, we still went on training, and one of the things which happened was that they formed a number of demonstration platoons. All these people had seen a lot of actual warfare, and all our fellows had seen a lot of actual warfare, and they formed these demonstration platoons to try and instruct other people how to carry on.